Alrighty, what's going on, guys? Howdy. Howdy, howdy. This is episode number 4 of I Just Want to Be Hiker Trash. As always, I'm your host, Scott. Hell yeah, Jesus on the trail. Scooter Hewley Fisher on the Instagram. Follow me already. Please, shoot me a follow. Give me the likes. I'm looking for validation. I want it. I yearn for it. Anyways, super pumped about this episode. From the beginning, when I was starting this podcast, I didn't want this just to be about thru-hikers. Because I think non-thru-hikers exemplify hiker trash just as much. So I immediately thought of my boy, Devin Colgrove. Devin and I worked together, and hopefully he's coming back this summer, but we led hikes in Rocky Mountain National Park in Estes Park, Colorado. And this guy is notorious for always leading the hardest hikes, having the hardest routes, and he doesn't even understand they're hard. I think he is part mountain goat. I think this guy was potentially formed in a lab using mountain goat DNA. That's how crazy he is. But we talk about his, you know, cross-country bikepacking trip. He goes across America on a bike. His experiences working in the Peace Corps in Guatemala. His experiences running ultras. Talk about a lot of stuff. Super excited. Hope you guys enjoy it. So stay tuned. Sweet. Recording. It doesn't say anything. I thought it'd be like 1, 2, 3, and we're recording. It just goes. All right, Devin Colgrove. So we know each other because of the YMC of the Rockies, where we both work. And are you coming back next year? We're kind of guiding hikes in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I might volunteer this next year. Yeah.
Cool, man.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
We just hit 100 years last year, and I saw the email that we're couldn't celebrate due to COVID, but I saw we're celebrating the 101 years. So I imagine that you're itching to lead that hike from the Y to Long's Peak.
Yeah. They usually do either a Long's Peak one from the Y, or they hike over to Grand Lake from the Y is another one that they've done before. So that's another
25
mile hike or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I did that one, didn't I?
Yeah. Remember that. You left at 2 a.m.
Yeah. So, Devin, I just have a, you know, when I was thinking about doing this podcast, I was trying to think, because I didn't want this just to be like through hikers and stuff, because I think hiker trash is like, goes beyond just through hikers. And I was thinking, who is somebody that I think demonstrates like the hiker trash ideals who's not necessarily a thru hiker? And I immediately thought of you, man. And so we've talked a little bit about it. But what do you think, what does hiker trash, I guess, mean to you?
Hiker trash is just kind of people who are very focused in life about hiking, and that kind of dominates their world. And like how some people are like all about like football or baseball, hiker trash is like, I'm gonna spend every single penny and like time that I can out in the woods hiking and dirt bagging it and like just having a great time. But yeah, definitely not very wealthy.
Yeah, well, dude, what I like about you, man, is like you've like go like, so you're a climber. And like, all obviously you're a runner, you did cross country in college, right? You're a runner in college. Yeah. And then just hearing about your bike packing excursion, you did, like, let's talk about it a little bit. So you biked across the US.
Yeah. First time I remember having the idea was in 2015. I was living in Nicaragua at the time. And I remember telling one of my friends, I was like, oh, I'm going to ride my bike across America. He was just like, oh, cool. And it's hard for them to grasp how big America is, like 5,000 kilometers, you know, or 3,000 miles, whatever it is. And so I finally finished college and I worked at the Y in 2017. And I was like, and I'd gotten into the Peace Corps in August. Yeah, late August. And so I knew I was leaving for that in February. And I was like, well, I got a couple months here to do it. So I never biked more than like 50 miles before. And I actually tried out. I had my carbon fiber bike, and I tried that out for like riding down the mountain, and I broke the back tire on it. It was a bike. I was like, okay, I need a new bike. So I bought a bike and did like a 48-mile ride, and I was like, all right, I'm good to go. And some friends, we rode a trip down to San Diego, and then bike took all the way over to Jacksonville. So it was like 41 days, and sleeping on the side of the road. And
bring a tent with you too?
No, so I was actually thinking about it. I was like, that's something I need to ask for Christmas for next year. But I've never owned a tent. I still don't own a tent. So I slept in a hammock for several times. And then out west a bunch, they have BLM land, Bureau of Land Management. So you can just camp wherever you want. So like one time I just like camped in this random field by a bunch of people like drilling for oil. So whatever you want, remake it. But yeah.
So you started in San Diego, and then how did it route you through the U.S.?
The reason I went south. So it was November, December. So I started November 14th and finished December 24th. And so I rode Southern California over into New Mexico, Arizona, New Mexico, and then just south through Texas. Rode through El Paso and then over to San Antonio, Austin. And then I ended up going through New Orleans, along the coast, all the way over to Jacksonville, through Florida and Alabama, Mississippi. Yep.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. Like I know a lot of thru hikers have started getting into bike pack, and that's something personally I've been thinking about, doing.
Yeah.
Do you have any like crazy car encounters? Like you worried about like getting hit at all, or how is the cars?
I remember in particular, there was one car that came pretty close. You know, I mean, obviously you're on the right side of the road.
Yeah.
And it just kind of zipped by you, and you feel it about, I don't know, maybe 6 inches or a foot off your left shoulder.
Jeez, dude. Yeah.
And I actually had a friend who biked to the four corners of the U.S. So his was like 10,000 miles or something. So you bike all the way up to Maine and then over to Washington and down to California and then over to Florida. And then he had done all four, and he was biking home from there. And he actually got hit by a car. He survived it, but it, like, had like a collapsed lung, a bunch of broken ribs.
Oh, jeez.
So I mean, it's definitely a concern. So, luckily I didn't have anything too bad. So
that's good. That's good. Yeah. And like, I guess, I mean, I know like from thru hiking, well, first, like, so you said the four corners is 10,000 miles. How long was your bike? How long was your route?
Be in 2,990, so almost 3,000.
Nice. Yeah. And how long does it take? Like, how many miles a day are you trying to get?
I think it was like 70, 73 or something. And you also have to take into account that I had a couple zeros.
Yeah.
the last like 5 days, I think I rode 498 miles or something.
Jeez, so, dude.
Yeah, I was averaging about 100 miles a day by the end.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, I can't comprehend. I don't even know biking, but that's knowing you, I think that's got to be a lot, because
You also have to think, I biked a few times at night, but as much as I could, I was just trying to bike sun up to sundown, which in the South, that's like maybe 10 or 11 hours a day. So you just get on your bike and start riding all day. And when the sun about goes down, then you stop for the night. So, yeah.
And so also like, so for me, when people ask me, when I do a big mile day, like, do I have a plan? Like, do I start at this time and end this time? And I'm honestly pretty good with the flow. And I feel like you generally are too, but for this trip, did you have to like make a plan? Like, all right, I got to get up this time. I got to ride, hit this many miles by 12 or whatever.
I never really had a plan for the day so much. I tried to have a plan for where I was sleeping that night.
Yeah.
So I would be like, okay, so I'm going to ride 88 miles today, or I'm going to ride 102 miles today. And honestly, like, I didn't have anything to do at night. Like, I was by myself for almost all of it. And so, it's like, I'm going to go to bed when it gets dark. And when it almost gets light, I'm going to wake up and just pack everything up and start riding, eat breakfast or whatever. So I don't know if you've heard of Warm Showers. It's an app that I used a bunch. So you message people before. It's like couch surfing, but for bikers. So I use that quite a bit. So you can message people like 2 days out and be like, hey, I'm 180 miles out. I'm going to be there in a couple of days. Can I stay with you? And they're like, oh yeah, sure, whatever.
Oh, sweet, man. Yeah.
It's a super cool app and they don't charge you for it. Usually give you a free meal. So
nice.
Yeah. Great. But
well, that's actually crazy thinking about doing that. So how long did that take you though? How long were you?
It was 41 days.
Nice. So yeah. And you're alone a lot. I remember that's gotta be tough, dude. Like just being alone, like, do you have any like crazy, this is a tough question. Cause I know there's so many crazy things out there, but is there something that stands out to you that's just been kind of like a silly or crazy moment that you just kind of experienced?
So yeah, the one that always comes to mind. So I was biking through Southern Texas. And it was fairly close to the border actually. I was out by Marathon, Alpine area, down by where people go down to go to Big Bend National Park.
Yeah.
I was out down there. I don't know. Have you been there?
I've not. I should. I used to live in Houston, but no, I never went there.
Okay. Yeah, it's a pretty area. I actually saw a tarantula out there when I was there. But
nice.
But no, I was just biking along and I was maybe 60 miles into 90 mile day. And this road was awful. Like, to give you an idea, like I wear a watch that counts my steps. So normally when you're biking, you don't get any steps, but this day, like the road was so bumpy that like, I got like 7,000 steps or something. Cause it was just like, rattling my whole body for the whole day. It was awful. No, I come to this intersection. There's this truck pulled over and this guy standing there. He's like, hey, you want a bottle of water? And I'm like literally in the middle of nowhere in Texas. And I'm like, yeah, great, man. And then he's like, hey, where are you going? I was like, I'm going to Alpine. He's like, oh yeah, we're staying there tonight. He's like, me and my buddy are like going to the observatory and going to this, it was like a national fort or something. And he's like, you want to join? And I'm like, sure, man. So I rode my bike in the back of his truck. I like jumped in this random guy's truck. Never met the guy before. We like go to this Mexican restaurant. They pay for me to eat. We drive around all day. And then at the end of the day, they just like drop me off at my campsite. I was like, dude, that was awesome. Like super nice dude. So I posted that on Facebook that night. I was like, this is a crazy story. And maybe 2 minutes later, I get a message from my grandma being like, Devin, you can't get into this truck with strangers. I was like, well, I did. And it was great. So
well, that's awesome. I know on the trail, when you have this experience, it's called trail magic. And those people that provide that are called trail angels. Is there some sort of term for when you're out there biking?
I don't really know if there's a term. I feel like you could call them about the same, like road angels or road magic.
Those road angels do that road magic. What was that? Maybe just call them,
they were from Canada, so just maybe just call them Canadians.
Oh, yeah, know? Dude. Yeah. Canadians are all magical. Yeah. Most are wizards and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, so from there, then you went to, got accepted to the Peace Corps, and then they told you while you're on that trip or before that you're going to go to Guatemala?
Yeah, so I knew when I got accepted in August that I was going to Guatemala. So I got accepted and then flew down there end of February in 2018, three years ago now.
Yeah. And then you said, was it true that you did your first ultra marathon in Guatemala?
So I did my first one in the States in 2017, that like about a month before I did my bike trip, or 2 months, I guess.
Oh, dang. Yeah. Okay.
Over in Steamboat Springs, I did a 50K over there. And that went really well. And then, I ended up doing a 50K down in Guatemala. And that was a good experience. I think about that a lot. I just started reading a book on training for ultras and it talks about dehydration and that might be the most dehydrated I've ever been in my entire life. Like, oh, it was awful.
Were you seeing things? Were you hallucinating at all? Or are you just like, just trying to get through?
I wasn't hallucinating, but it was like the last couple miles. I was just like, I knew it was bad. And I was like, I just got to finish. I'm running like 11, 12 minute miles, like just drag into the finish line. And I get done and I pee the color I've never peed. And I hope I never pee the color again. Like, oh, it was like just brown. It was awful. Jeez,
dude. Yeah.
It was so bad. But yeah, drink a bunch of water, a bunch of like Gatorade type stuff. And I actually felt pretty good after that. So
that's good. That's good. Yeah. Was there sort between your, so you had done one in the US and so that was your second 20, was it what K 50 K? Oh, 50 K. Was there a big difference in like the vibe you got before the race or while you're racing with, down in Guatemala? Was there much of a cultural difference as far as the racing community?
No, honestly, I feel like it's pretty similar. In Guatemala, I think it's interesting because it tends to be more like upper class people who run because, of course, they have a lot of rates of poverty and stuff. So yeah. People who come from those communities don't tend to be racers. Occasionally they are. There was one guy who was at a race I was at in February of last year, and he was like a sponsored runner, like just from one of the communities. But he was a really good runner, and he ran 50 milers, 50 Ks, 60 milers, whatever. I love both communities. They are very similar, you know, people who get out and run all day. It's not everybody, you know, so.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It seems like there though, there's people that were just like, so they're not racing, but they're locals and they're just killing it out in the mountains or out running, and they're just do it for the hell of it. They don't care about this running community or whatever.
Occasionally. It's kind of interesting because a lot of times some of these communities that are way out there, like I live in a community that was way out there, they'll put on races, and it's kind of funny. Honestly, it was like I'd been in sight like maybe a month, and every community has a fair. And so we had our town fair, and at the end of the fair, they have a race. And so I was like, well, I'm going to enter the race. So I entered the race, and I destroyed everyone. And I came in first place. And every time the race, the way they did it, it's like one big loop. And then like, it was like three or four smaller loops. And every time I'd go by, people would be like, Diego, Diego. And people threw water on me during the race. And like, it was just this crazy event. And like my host family was there cheering me on. Oh my gosh, it was wild. And ever since then, everybody was like, yeah, now you're like integrated into the community. Like everyone knew who I was. Yeah, it was pretty funny. So
I feel like in a way, Diego is your trail name. Like if you were had to have a trail name, do you think Diego would be it? Or would is there something else?
I could definitely go for Diego. Yeah.
How did that happen? Yeah. They said, Devin, Diego's close enough.
No, so kind of a funny story. So when I was in 10th grade, I moved from Iowa to Missouri, and I enrolled in Spanish class. So I was in Spanish 1. And when I was in the class, the teacher was like, oh, okay, so here's a piece of paper with just a bunch of Spanish names on it. And they're like, okay, so you guys all get to pick your Spanish name. So, all right. So I saw the name Diego, and the first thing that came to my mind was the Diego from Ice Age, the saber-toothed tiger.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Diego's a cool name. And so then I like changed it on my Facebook. I was like, because I didn't really like seeing my middle name. My middle name is Daniel. I didn't really like seeing it on Facebook, so I was like, I'm gonna put Diego. And then whenever I went to Nicaragua, like in 2015. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I'm just going to have everyone call me Diego because no one can pronounce Devin. So that's what I did. And ever since I've gone to a Latin American country, I've just been like, oh, yeah, people can call me Diego. It stuck. So I still have a bunch of friends that know me as Diego. They don't even really know my real name. So,
dude, that sounds like a trail name to me, dude.
Yeah, that's from my understanding of trail names. I'm not familiar with them, but it's like, oh, yeah, that dude's name was like, airplane or something. You're like,
yeah, dude. So you keep mentioning Nicaragua, dude. And I remember you talking about that. So what made you go, why were you in Nicaragua?
My major in college was intercultural studies. So for like an internship, I did a study abroad with some missionaries there. So I was there for like 4 months, working with missionaries, and, we did church services and kids programs, and, we helped with a feeding program and yeah, different stuff like that. So
is that what made you want to do the Peace Corps after that, or?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I'd say that played a really big part. And I was kind of like, yeah, I want to spend time abroad. And I wanted to learn Spanish. So one of my goals after I graduated was to spend like 6 months at least in a Latin American country learning Spanish. So
nice, dude.
So that was my reason for joining the Peace Corps. Yeah.
And then you were in the Peace Corps for, is that a 3-year commitment? How long are you there?
So you can't be there for three. Most are 2 years. So okay, I was there. I was going to be there another month. I was going to be there until April, but then COVID hit and everyone got evacuated. So
that's right.
And a little early, but I was like right at the end of my time anyway. And
yeah,
some people had been there 2 weeks and they got evacuated. So,
oh geez, dude. Yeah. So I guess lucked out a little bit, but still, man, that's no fun. Yeah. Come to the States, man. That's gotta be, I know we talked about it a little bit in the car, but that's gotta be a huge culture shock. I mean, what are a few things that you notice at first? Like, I know for me, like when I'm on the trail for a while, I even notice stuff. So I can't even imagine like being in Guatemala for years and then coming back, or almost 2 years and then coming back.
Yeah. Well, I'll answer, but then I want to know your answer as well. So I think for me, and I've had this conversation with quite a few friends, is one of the biggest things, like you go in the grocery store and there's so many options and it's just so overwhelming. So like you walk in and you're like, why the heck would I need 75 choices of bread? Like it's just ridiculous. They're like 16 different types of potatoes. You're like, I don't really care. They're just potatoes. Like, so having to make choices about all this different stuff was definitely really challenging. And it hits you in different ways at different times. I think one of the things that hit me the hardest, of course, I started working at Domino's this summer. So my host dad, when I was in Guatemala, I had two host families. So I lived with one family for 10 weeks and then the other family I lived with for like 2 years, but I still keep in touch with both of them. But my first host dad, he would go to work for like, he would leave at like 5 a.m., catch the bus. It's like an hour and a half there, work for 12 hours, come home, get home, and then be like a 13-hour day. And he would do that 5 days a week. And he got paid, I want to say maybe like $60 a week, something like that. Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe 100, you know, but not much. And so just thinking sometimes when I would deliver a pizza and somebody would tip me like $15 or whatever, and they'd tip me like his entire daily wage in one delivery. And that's the part that like blew my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I still can't get over that fact.
Yeah.
So I've just been trying to do what I can while I'm here to help support. Like I support his daughter. I just started sending them money so that his daughter could go to, high school. She was going to high school. Their high school is kind of like a trade school. So that she wants to be like a beautician, so she's going to school for that. So I'm sending them money and a couple other people.
Something happened to your mic, dude, just letting you know. Cut off a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, is that better?
That's better. So the daughter, she's in beautician school, and you've been sending her money and then a few other people. And then what were you saying from there?
Yeah, because I was just saying, because it's sometimes easier for us to make, like, it's almost literally impossible for them to make money and send their kids to school at times. So just providing them that opportunity to have an education, like people should have an education, you know.
No, definitely, man. Big ups to you for doing that, though. That's I definitely think you're very giving person, and I have admired that in you. I've also admired like how you're always positive in the face of adversity. It seems like Like if you don't like going on a hard hike, man, you're just always positive. Or if we don't know the route, you would never know that you didn't know the route. Like we're figuring it out.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I feel the same way about you. You're like, yeah. Well, go look around this corner.
I tried. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I'm sure like talking to people, they've got to have some sort of like, are there any big misunderstandings about the Guatemalan people or something that you wish that people here understood about that culture?
I think the biggest thing, of course, Guatemalans have made it in the news recently, and Hondurans, and El Salvadorians, because I don't know how much people know. So in the early 2000s, this is just a quick immigration lesson, but early 2000s, the majority of people coming across the border and being apprehended at the border were Mexicans from Mexico. That I feel like with the North American Free Trade Agreement, everything that kind of started to shift, and we started seeing less and less Mexicans. And now we're seeing a lot more Guatemalans and people from Honduras and El Salvador and other Central American countries. So for people who don't know, Guatemala is the country right below Mexico. A lot of them see that, oh, hey, look, my buddy down the street has a new house because his brother was in the States for 4 years and sent back money. So it's like, oh, I want to go do that too so I can send back money. So at least where I live, people weren't necessarily being persecuted or in threat of gangs or anything like that where I lived. But yeah, they're like, I want to go make money and I want to have a better life. And the United States is a huge risk for them. They pay coyotes like $6,000-$7,000, you know, they pay a lot of money. And for something they don't know. And they know it's a risk, but they're willing to do it anyway. So, and then the other thing I think that is super interesting about Guatemala is it's 49% indigenous. So it has the highest indigenous population, like percentage, of any country in the Western Hemisphere. So if you think like Native Americans in the United States, that's essentially what they are in Guatemala. So like I lived with an indigenous family in Guatemala. There's 22 native languages that are spoken every day.
Oh, wow.
When I was at the dinner table, my family would speak Ixchel, which is a native Mayan language. So I wouldn't, even though I speak Spanish, I wouldn't understand hardly anything. I took some Ixchel classes while I was there, but I'm pretty much just learning the basics of like, hey, how are you? Shut up. Come
here. Yeah.
Yeah. Things to get you in trouble. It's super interesting country, super diverse. They have like 30 some volcanoes, like 37 volcanoes.
I remember you talking about, and I never even thought Guatemala had volcanoes. Like I didn't know that about Guatemala. So that's kind of crazy.
It's so gorgeous. It has one, if not the prettiest lake in the world, Lake Atitlan. You can stand there and there's three volcanoes. So there's two of them on your left and like one in the middle kind of, and it's just gorgeous. There's an ultra race that I wanted to do that I didn't end up doing that goes up and down all three of them in one day. It's like, I don't know, 50 miles or something. And I don't know how many feet of elevation gain, like 13,000.
Oh man. Yeah. But,
So maybe one day I'll go back and do that, but.
Well, if anyone could do it, man, I feel like you could definitely do that.
Yeah. And
so I know like so we could talk. I don't want to brush over stuff, but I feel like you've got a lot of interesting stuff. And so I want to move on to, you know, just kind of the stuff that you did this summer. You're pretty notorious at the Y for whenever you're leading a hike, everyone knows, okay, it's probably going to be a tough hike or we're going to go a crazy route or go off trail and stuff. So what were some of the bigger routes that you, I know you had a few goals this past summer, but what are some of the ones that you accomplished?
I'll do one that I did and then one that, I don't know, I just didn't get around to for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is one that I did that, I'm probably most proud of that I'd been dreaming of for years. I'd tried it once, 2017, and only made it about halfway around, and then a storm came in and I bailed.
Yeah.
But it's the flat top DeLong's one. I think I talked to you about that. But,
yeah.
So most people go flat top, and then if they're feeling good, they go pallets. So I did flat top pallets, and then you go over to Otis. And so if you see it on a map, you just follow this huge cirque all the way around, and it ends up being 11 peaks with 20 miles, a lot of ton of scrambling, a lot of low fifth class moves.
Yeah, that's right. There's like two of those. Where are is like after Taylor, and then what are the two? Two sketcher moves.
After Powell, you get down to the notch, the McHenry's notch, and then you go McHenry. And that was low fifth class. And then coming off McHenry's, actually, it was kind of funny. I actually met somebody. I don't know if I told you this, but I met somebody, and so I was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm doing the what he calls walk in the park." So it's like the last half of it. And I was like, "Oh, nice, I'm doing the same route." So we summited Chiefshead together. And then going off Chiefshead, that was the part that I was most worried about, because I'd never done that before. So I was glad to be with somebody there. So we went off Chiefshead, traversed around some fourth class ledges there. That was a little hairy. And then there were a few fifth class moves. And then you get up on the prow of Pagoda and then just make it all the way, just keep going all the way to the summit. So that was that was exciting. I was glad to actually hike with someone for that part, and that was kind of fun. It ended up being like 10,000 feet of elevation gain, and it was by far the hardest hike I did the whole summer. So
yeah, I mean that's crazy. So from Long's, which if anyone is familiar with 14ers, I mean Long's Peak is it's definitely an intermediate 14er. It's a tougher one. So to combine that with anything is crazy in itself. But so from Long's, what do you do after that to make your way back?
So for Long's, the technical route, you're supposed to go down what's called Keyhole Ridge. So you have to like down solo like 5-5-5-6 stuff. And I was like, I'm good. So I just went down the keyhole route down to the keyhole. Yeah. And then instead of like going down to the boulder field, you stay left and you go up Storm. So then I don't know if you've been up Storm, but so you go down Storm and then you go all the way down to Half Mountain. So you just keep following that ridge.
Yeah.
And that for me went on forever. By that time, my knees were just crushed and pretty tired.
Well, that's kind of tough. This is kind of a terrible story. I remember seeing this after I left Estes, but there was a man about our age who passed away this summer. He was doing that similar route after Long's.
Yeah, he was doing the same route that I did, and where he got where he passed away. No one knows exactly what happened. Happened obviously, but he was died down in the notch. Getting down to McHenry's notch. And I actually have a story about that. Me and my friend Nick were trying to do that route. Not the exact route, but we were doing Thatch Top to Powell over to McHenry's. So we did the ridge from Thatch Top to Powell, and that's like low fifth class. We just like brought our climbing shoes and slid them on, and it wasn't a big deal. And then getting down to the notch, if you stay on the ridge, it's tough. There's like wrap gear there, like for people who have rappelled into it. And eventually we were just out on that face and we were like, this is awful. We were like, we're going to die. We were like, we need to go back up. So we climbed back up and then we found this like sneak around the south side, around the right side, if you're going from Powell to McHenry's.
Yeah.
And it was like fourth class and it really wasn't bad at all. We were like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And we made it down to the notch with no problems and then back up. And it wasn't a big issue, but there's no beta for that online. I couldn't find beta for that anywhere, and not that many people do it, so I'm sure, like, obviously I'm speculating, but I'm sure that's what happened to this kid, so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is. And even if you do have information, I feel like it's tough to find those routes. Like I remember going up McHenry's in 2015 with some guys, and we couldn't find Stoneman Pass. We couldn't find that. So we went up a different route, and it was a little bit hairy, but we got across. But coming down was so sketchy, man. And I remember feeling like, oh God, this is it, man. I'm gonna die.
Or if you don't die, you're gonna watch one of your friends die.
Yeah, really. That's scary. Yeah. The mountains are really just, they're not forgiving. And But what were you gonna say?
The one that I didn't get to for whatever reason.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I wanted to do the Mummy Marathon, and I would love to try and set the speed record on that. I think it's like 4:43 or something.
Dude, that one, have you done it before though?
Yeah.
Well, cause this last summer was the first time I did the Mummy Marathon, and dude, that just like, I don't know if I just wasn't feeling that day, dude, but like, oh God, after you get like do CCY, I hated going up Fairchild, and then Hague was even worse. I hated Fairchild so much. I was like, this is terrible. And then you get to the top and then you look down and you're like, oh God, I got to go this ridge to Hague. This is crazy, man. And then you do it. And then, actually it's Ypsilon to Fairchild is kind of crazy. And then after you go to, I'm done Fairchild to Hague's not bad, but going up Hague is like, oh God, dude, when will this end?
5,000 feet of elevation during the day. Yeah.
Yeah. You said it was like, how much is it? You cut out a little bit there.
It's like 6,000 or something.
6,000 just that one climb?
No, in the whole thing.
In the whole thing. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. But not that many miles, really. It's a Mummy Marathon, but it's like, what is it? How many miles? Like 16 or something? Or
18, I think.
Yeah. But I saw online, it's like Mummy Kill Route is what people, is another name for it. But Mummy Marathon definitely sounds a little bit better.
Yeah. But no, so I did it one time, I think like 3 years ago, four years ago, now 2017. I didn't have a car that year. So I rode my bike to the Long Lake Trailhead. I rode from the Y down into town and then up Fall River Road all the way to the trailhead. I got there at like 7, I think. And then I just started walking down the road and then walked up Old Fall River Road, and I just hitchhiked until somebody gave me a ride, and then they dropped me off at Chicken Pass, and then I did it and rode back down, ran back down to my bike, and then rode my bike back into town. And that was quite the epic.
Yeah, dude, I could imagine, man. I was happy I did it, but I don't know if that's a route that I would want to do again. And maybe I just wasn't feeling it that day, but for whatever reason, that hike just like was definitely not a favorite of mine. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that again. But like individually, I think beautiful peaks, man. Like I think that route from like Hague to Mummy is like fantastic, man. I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's gorgeous back in there. Yeah, no, I want to do Blitzen Ridge on Ypsilon as well. It's like a 5.4. So I need to find someone to go solo that with me this next summer. But yeah, it's supposed to be gorgeous as well.
So do you have any plans for this coming summer? Or what are you thinking you're going to be doing?
So I'm working for the school district now, so I get my whole summer off. So, so my tentative plan is to ride, I just bought a motorcycle about a month or so ago, to ride my motorcycle up to Alaska, with my uncle. But Canada is still not open, so we may opt for something like the Boundary Waters or something in Michigan, but
there you go, man.
Yeah. But I definitely have plans in the park still. I want to climb the diamond and do a few other climbs, so.
Well, you're still in Estes now, and I just saw, dude, you set, I'll let you say, but you just like did a personal record or set a personal record. Was it like a 50-mile day, or what'd you do?
Yeah, so it was like 42. So
nice.
So
dude,
one of my buddies messaged me. When was that? Well, actually, I heard about it from another friend. He was like, "Hey, our mutual friend Sam is going to do a solstice run, like to celebrate winter solstice. He's going to run all day." And I was like, "Oh, that sounds awesome! Sign me up." so I messaged Sam. I was like, "Hey, can I get in on this?" He's like, "Yeah, for sure." So we ended up doing it the 22nd because we both had to work on the 21st. Anyway, yeah, we started at sunrise at like 7:22 and started down at the mountain shop in town, ran up past the Y, ran up past Bible Point, all the way to, we went to Sprague Lake. His girlfriend met us there. We resupplied. Then we ran up to Glacier Gorge Trailhead, got some water there. Then when we went up and did, went up to Alberta Falls, went up to Mills, and then ran across Mills over to Jules, and then ran back, and then ran up to the lock. It was so windy at the lock. And he had never been to Lake Iaha, so we made that trip around to Lake Iaha, and then back down to Dream, up to Emerald, back down, and then we went back up to Lake Helene, and then back down. Well, before we went to Helene, my parents met us, and we both had Euros.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Great. Yeah, talk about trail angels.
Yeah, really.
And then he called it a day at Bear Lake. He ended up with 30, and then I ran back down past the Y, and then all the way back down into town. So
nice, dude. That yeah. that hiker run from Bear Lake to the Y is, I don't know, nothing special. I remember just like hoping there's some sort of view, and it's all right, but it's really, it's kind of a uneventful. What is it from Bear? Is it like 8 miles from Bear to the Y even?
Yeah, or, it would be something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the good thing about running. It's like, I'm like, you get it over with quickly. Like, so it's like an hour instead of if you're hiking, it's two or three, you know?
Yeah, no. And exactly. I've been wanting to try to do ultra running. Just like, that's just the comfort. I just like having that stuff on my back and like being able to trust that is something I just like need to overcome and just ditch the pack and try to run it a little bit.
I mean, like, honestly, I got this trail running pack this summer that's like 15 liters. So it's not that different from a day pack.
Yeah.
But it's suited for running, and I love it. And, the reason I got it, honestly, is because I also did longs one time this summer, and I did it with my friend's pack, and I did the cables route, and so I brought my climbing shoes, but the shoes don't fit in the pack, so I had to like strap them on, and so then when I was going down, it's not a big deal when you're going up because it's not very bumpy, but going down, you're like jostling a lot more.
Yeah.
So my shoes kept like coming off. So at some point I like just take him and I'm just like running with a shoe in each hand, like running down lawns, and I look like an idiot.
What's sketchy, man?
I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna get a running pack that I can put like shoes inside of, you know, and
yeah,
other stuff I need. So that's why I got a big one, and I really enjoy it. So
what do you, when you're out there for the day, like what do you carry with you?
Food, obviously, like gels, Cliff bars, yeah. Water. During the summer, I was carrying a water filter. I'm still carrying it.
Yeah,
there's not a water filter right now, but yeah, water filter. I mean, those are the biggest things. A jacket. On our last adventure, for half of it, we had micro spikes as well.
That's right. That's what I want to ask you too. Yeah, that's. Well, yeah. So congrats, by the way, on the setting a PR, and that's a big day, dude, especially like the time of year you're doing it. So you brought micro spikes, obviously. Did you encounter a whole lot of snow? Was it mostly packed?
Yeah. So Sam's girlfriend actually met us at Glacier Gorge Trailhead. So we didn't have him for the first like half of the day.
Nice.
And there was ice that we ran into at one point that we had to like go up and down the trail because otherwise we just slid right off.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then we put micro spikes on, and so I had them for the last like, the middle part of the day, I guess. But yeah, those are the biggest things that really help. But yeah, at that point, you're just trying to cut all the weight out of your pack that you can when you're running that far for that long.
Yeah, for sure, man.
But,
well, dude, yeah. So I feel like you just have like. Just your attitude is, like I was saying before, is not that you don't care, but it's very like go with the flow and just take on whatever comes to you. Is there a reason for that? Do you think you've always been that way, or has there been some sort of like experiences that you've had that made you be like, all right, man, whatever happens, I can handle it?
Yeah. So, I'm sure you have this too, and I'm sure most people people are listening to this as well, they have the same attitude, because it's kind of like, I've had this thought a lot recently, is when you experience something really tough or dramatic, or that you go without food for like 2 or 3 days, it makes you realize that like things can get a lot worse. Or like, yeah, you know, you have these awful experiences in the mountains where you like almost freeze to death, or like you have hypothermia, or like, you know, we've all had those if you've been out in the mountains long enough. And then any experience less than that, you're like, oh, this isn't a big deal. We can handle this because we're not like freezing to death. It's not like sleeting rain right now, you know? And it just makes things a lot easier to handle. So I think having those really like traumatic experiences, for lack of a better word, of like being 600 feet up on a mountain and being like, I don't know where to place my gear, you know, like, make all these other experiences of like guiding, it makes it a lot easier, because you're like, it's a lot easier to stay calm and relaxed, because you're like, well, it could be a lot worse, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man. Well,
and
I think that's,
you have a plan thought out. Yeah, you have a plan thought out of like, oh, if it gets worse, this is what we're gonna do. Yeah, why do you think that about yourself? Like, because you're much the same way, like easy to go with the flow, whatever happens.
Yeah, and I mean, I think some of it comes to personality, but I do agree with exactly what you're saying. And to me, what you said is what kind of, I think, is underneath it all, what it means to be hiker trash. And I don't want to put too much meaning on it, but I just think like that whole idea that, okay, my body and my mind can handle way worse. Like, we're incredible beings. We can handle so much. And then also like just us in the US, like the privileges we have, and like just the lack of perspective. And that's why I think it's so great that when you were in Guatemala, and that whole cultural difference, and, you know, maybe they view things a little bit differently, is something that we could here benefit from. You know, we have so much.
Yeah. I think we could learn a lot to live with a lot less. There's so much excess, and consumerism is a big part of that, and always having to have the best whatever is a big part of that. Learning to live with less is a big deal. Super important.
For sure, man. Are you still living with Cole? Where are you at in Estes Park right now?
No, so so I still work at Domino's up in Estes, but I'm actually living down in Loveland now.
Oh, nice.
So it's nice. Get to live. Yeah, it's crazy. I'm like training for a 50 miler actually in the end of March out in Pennsylvania. So,
oh wow, dude.
I just registered for today, so it'll be a new distance for me. Trying to get in shape for that. And I'm actually reading a book. and this is a fun fact, it doesn't really relate to anything, but it's talking about how much excess or how much fat, like even a lean person has. It's like, it was like 53,000 calories. So I'm like, at that rate, you could hike like 500 miles just on your stored body fat. I'm like, dude, that's nuts. So anyway, so it gave me hope that I'm like, oh, I can't do anything. I have stored body fat.
Well, it makes starving to death even more insane, dude. It's like, oh man, the things you have to go through just to lose that much to even get to that point. It's crazy.
Like you said, the human body is incredible and so resilient and adaptable.
So what do you have to do to train for the 50? What's your like train plan kind of look like?
So I get 12 weeks. So I actually just started reading a book about training for ultras. And so one of the things that they recommend, at least in this book, is start with like speed work, especially a long ways out. Cause their reasoning is if today I did speed work at like 5 minute pace, like it was fine. But I'm like, if I train my body to do that, then like 6 minute pace feels a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And if I train a bunch at 6 minute pace, then like 7 minute pace feels a lot easier. So just building that cardiovascular system. So then hopefully at race day, I can race at like say 8 minute miles, and it goes like a jog the whole time, so that my body can process food and water and everything you need to survive 50 miles.
That makes sense. That it's just funny going from hiking to running, thinking like, oh God, dude, my mile per hour pace is terrible compared to that. But
yeah, but you got the endurance there. And honestly, like if you put in a few speed workouts, I know that sounds awful, but even for you, that'd be like, say 8 minute miles, just jogging down the road for a couple miles, you know, that's going to pay huge dividends in your hiking.
Yeah, for sure. I'm hoping to, I don't know if I'll actually do a race, but I'm hoping to run an ultra distance here within the year.
With me.
What was that? Sorry.
I said, you're welcome to come out to Pennsylvania with me. I can send you that information.
Well, I appreciate it. Unfortunately, I'll be in school. but I wish you best of luck. I mean, that's another PR, and that's an awesome thing. I'm glad that they're still doing races now with COVID. So,
I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast so early on. I'm still trying to figure things out, but, I thought of you immediately. I've been wanting to get you on and try to figure out how to do it. I think you've got like some really cool stories, so hopefully get you on better when, with the interview skills up, but, so how can people follow along? Like if you know, people want to see what Devin's up to, what's Diego up to? How do they follow along with your journeys, man?
Probably the biggest thing, just add me as a friend on Facebook. at one point I was posting more on Instagram, but maybe I'll hop back on that train in a little bit. But add me as a friend on Facebook, Devin Diego.
Hell yeah, dude. Do you have any last words you want people to know?
I just want to thank you for having me on. It's always fun to get to share your stories and talk about your life. So I appreciate you, having me on and catching up. There's one quote that I haven't been able to get out of my head ever since. I think it was my first summer at the Y. It might have been my second, but I think it was my first. It was by Jack Kerouac. It was live, travel, adventure, bless, and don't be sorry. And so I don't know. I always like every part of that. So,
I like that too, man.
Sometimes it's tough at best, but it's always worth it.
For sure, dude. Well, again, appreciate you coming on. I hope we can get you back at some point, because I think you got some great stories, and I don't want to brush through things, but I think this is a great overview of like everything that, or a lot that you've done. And so I appreciate you coming on. So,
yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah, good luck with your podcast. I'll be sure to give it a listen.
Yeah, dude. Sweet, man. Well, I'm just going to end it, dude. If that's all right with you.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, I'll talk to you soon, man.